Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
You know what I'm saying? Kicking like motherfucking Karate Kid up in this bitch, man.
Bug out. Wordplay. Fafu.
Yeah, we got cool music on All Marine Radio. Nobody's got shit on us. That's actually from the movie Blue Crush. It's a surfing movie. Kind of, not really. But there was like NFL players in Hawaii, and the guy falls in love with a girl, and there's a love story in there someplace. She's a surfer, a competitive surfer. Yeah, because that's how we do it here. Joining me for the first time in a month is Alex Hollings. What is up? Where have you been?
I've been all over the place, man. I'm actually still not home. I am in Washington, D.C. right now, looking at the Lockheed Martin building while I talk to you, which is kind of crazy.
Where is the Lockheed Martin building?
The Lockheed Martin building's in, I think technically this is Arlington. It's right in the same office complex that Sandbox's headquarters are in, which is why I'm up here.
So, the big career move to Sandbox. Tell everybody what Sandbox is and where they find it in case they haven't been tracking your career as closely as they should have.
Well, I mean, everybody should always be tracking my career. Right? But what Sandbox is it's, among other things, it's a brand new news outlet, Sandbox News, which I highly recommend you check out. And I also highly recommend you follow on Facebook. But Sandbox News is an offshoot of Sandbox, the brand, which newer Marines are definitely familiar with Sandbox because you have seen their letters on Paris Island and MCRD San Diego for the last 3 years or so. Sandbox started out as an app that makes it easier to send mail primarily to service members in recruit or basic training, but also when they're in training or on deployments elsewhere. And so Sandbox has been doing that for the last few years and growing rapidly. And they brought me on January 1st to build their new arm of the company, which is Sandbox News, where our focus is on being a news outlet that places the emphasis on the nobility of service, basically, rather than kind of controversy and negativity. I'm not saying that that's not important, but there's plenty of places to go on the internet to find bad news. We're trying really hard to be the place that you can go to find good news about military service. You can learn more about how to advance your career. Your mom can learn more about what it is that you're doing out there. And we're alleviating that thing. When I first was moving out to 29 Palms with my wife, and my mom asked me where we were going to live. And I told her we're going to live in a house. That was such a foreign idea to her that Marines live in houses. You know, there's a really big gap sometimes in the civilian and the military mindset. We want to bridge that gap, but we also want to be a place where you can go find out what's going on in the world without having to kind of subscribe to any political affiliation. So I'm really excited about it. Please go and check it out. We're growing very quickly. January, as a matter of fact, had a 49% traffic increase over December. That's all you guys going to check out the site. So I really, really appreciate it. Please keep supporting this endeavor so that we can make positivity a thing in the news again.
To say nothing about the Liz Hurley picks that you guys slide in there on the down low.
Now, not just Elizabeth Hurley. I mean, I've got a Daily Post. No, I'm just kidding. If you haven't been there, there are no Elizabeth Hurley pictures. I'm sorry to disappoint, but maybe I'll get some up there just for Max's sake.
Those are all legit people that visit? No Liz Hurley or any other aspiring starlet or aging starlet that wants to reaffirm her sexuality on the internet?
I tell you what, I wouldn't turn down an interview with Liz Hurley, that's for sure. Well, I'd have to find an angle, you know, but I wouldn't turn it down.
You know, she supports the troops, right? Everybody supports the troops.
Right, everybody supports the troops, as long as it only counts as putting a yellow sticker on your car.
Exactly, giving a thumbs up in a photo opportunity. I support the troops. All right, so give me your news page today. What's the lead story?
Oh, man, there's all kinds of stuff going up today. Right. One piece of content that we just published that I think will be interesting to a lot of people is a primer on the South China Sea. You know, you see a lot of headlines about the United States conducting phone ops in the South China Sea. Phone ops are freedom of navigation operations.
Oh, I thought they were on their cell phones out there.
Right. But when you see headlines about the United States kind of behaving aggressively in a sea that's named after China, it's easy for you to make the assumption that this is kind of, you know, how North Korea would characterize it as American imperialism, right? But the truth is that the South China Sea extends thousands of miles away from the Chinese border. And China's claim over the South China Sea overlaps seven other nations, you know, legal international claims over the same waterway. And that matters because over a third of all global commerce goes over the South China Sea each year. And on top of that, it is an incredibly resource-rich stretch of the Pacific Ocean. So not only is it resource-rich in terms of oil, but it's also resource-rich in terms of fish. And fishing is a really integral part of the economies for a lot of these Asian nations. So China's claims over it it puts them in a position to wield an incredible amount of diplomatic and economic power. The entire crux of their military modernization effort, at least the early portions of it, are all aimed at dominating the South China Sea. So it's a complicated topic, but when you really get down to it, what it really comes down to is China is trying to say that the street, the highway belongs to them. And the United States, France, the UK, and a number of Asian nations counter that claim, saying anybody can use this highway. And that is, I'd argue that if there were to be a World War III in the next century, the South China Sea or the Suwalki Gap just north of Poland are the two hot spots to look at. Those are the two places where conflict with either China and the South China Sea or Russia and the Suwalki Gap, those are the places where conflict could ignite if conflict were to ignite between these nations. So it benefits all of us to kind of have a general understanding of what it is, especially when you see news where the headlines kind of insinuate that America is overstepping its grounds in places like the South China Sea or in places like European defense. There's a big picture that these operations inform, and that big picture, to be honest, is the international economy. It's international commerce, but it's also security in a very real way, you know? So that's one of the bigger pieces today, but there's a bunch of other great content on Sandbox News. A lot of it's written by military spouses from the perspective of a military spouse, just aimed at ways that you can make your military life a little bit more comfortable, you know, or ways, now it's tax season, what programs you can go and find so you can file your taxes for free. So we try to have a good mix of, this is pertinent news that matters to you. We also have some stories that are just like positive stories about service members. We had one that did very, very well in the last couple of weeks about Dr. Johnny Kim. You know, first he was a Navy SEAL, then he was a Harvard educated doctor. Right. Now he's an astronaut. And he sat down with me 2 weeks ago just to answer some questions about, you know, what it takes to be that successful in so many different fields. So make sure you check it out, guys. There's lots of good content. We are publishing 5 stories a day now, which is a huge uptick from 1 story a day we were doing in December. So we're very busy, but it's all great stuff. I'm really excited.
Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with the website Vox, they do a lot of explaining, and I think it's sorely needed because when you see a headline, for instance, I saw a BBC interview with the president of Taiwan. And you would have thought that Taiwan was attempting to annex mainland China from the questions.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? This provocation of Taiwan, like, flaunting its freedom, right? And it's like, dude, did you not read? Do you know that mainland China has never had any historical claim over the island of Formosa or Taiwan or whatever the hell you want to call it? And you're listening to the questioning, and you're like, this is so wrong. It's joke. It's what, 18 to 20 million people on Taiwan? And they're having to apologize for having always been a free nation and somehow or other, like, not cooperating with China's, you know, emperor's new clothes theories, which is what they do there and what they do in the South China Sea. It is not related to, like, the law of the sea. It is not related to international law. It's that China says this is what's right, and then Vietnam, Malaysia, the Philippines, Indonesia, everybody else, get ready. Okay.
And now, a couple of years ago, they actually went to court. The Philippines took China to court in The Hague.
And what?
And The Hague ruled on behalf of the Philippines, and China said, yeah, we don't care.
Yeah, we don't care, and the Philippines won't enforce it because what China says to them is the rest of the story, and that is this. look, if you want to go the legal route, then we'll pinch your access to our markets and we'll throw your economy right on its ass and you out of office. So
Before you go on any further, I want to talk about how right you are right there. For anybody who's not sure how effective financing can be, just look at this past year's fallout between the NBA and China over one coach's tweet in support of the Hong Kong protests. It cost the NBA hundreds of millions of dollars. I can tell you that I've written for news outlets that have barred me from writing about Chinese foreign policy because of Chinese investment. China, the government, really? Chinese government invests tens of millions of dollars into Hollywood each year to make sure that we are representing China in a positive way in our movies.
Well, right, the Top Gun, just the patches on Maverick's pack.
What a great
jacket,
example.
Right? Changed because Taiwan. Now, there used to be, this is what it used to be. The Chinese, and I know because I have a former brother-in-law that is in this business. The Chinese used to say, right, hey, in this scene, and they would cut a separate scene for a lot of movies in China, right? It has to be this way. Now they don't say that anymore. They say this has to be the scene in the movie.
And this is one of the things that Americans have trouble understanding about China and the way that life works in China. Because China is effectively a capitalist communist society, the Chinese government runs just about everything. So here in the United States, we have the MPAA, which, flawed as it may be, gives our movies ratings, right? Now, technically speaking, you don't have to get rated to release a movie. But most movie theaters in the United States won't release unrated films, right? So this is a non-governmental body that the market has kind of dictated as mandatory. And they give us our ratings for our movies, but they don't decide what you see and what you don't see. There's an argument to be made that they can have a huge effect on the economic viability of a movie. If you rate a movie rated R, it's tougher to make as much money as a PG-13, for instance. But for the most part, the American government has little to nothing to do with what gets depicted in film on screen in the United States. That is not the case in China. And
right? It's just like, hello? We lost him. Did you mute? Uh-oh. See what I mean? The Chinese were listening, the son of a bitches. We'll see if Alex comes back. Hello? Alex? Yeah, the son of a bitches were listening. And they cut him off. Not on my watch, Hollings. And we're back. I think. Or not. Oh. He's rebooting. My Skype just gave me a prompt that says, give me a call when you're back. Ooh, so I just hit enter. If you've never been to sandbox.com, go over and check that out. Pretty cool what they're doing there. Yeah. And so I would highly recommend that to you. Alex always writes interesting stuff on a broad range of topics from aviation. You know, his stuff has been in Popular Mechanics and a host of other publications, but a favorite here on Allmarine Radio. He's in D.C. and up having some meetings with his new bosses. So we'll join him whenever he gets back here after he reboots. It's probably, though, in a hotel. It's just the hotel connection. If you don't, I always try to use my cell phone connection. And so if it's strong enough, the problem is sometimes it won't be strong enough. And then you got to use the hotel connection with all the with all the instability that goes with that. So we'll talk to Alex when he gets back. Tomorrow, I want to play something that I watched a couple weeks ago, and I want you to hear the audio, kind of a detailed explanation of My Lai on the done at CSIS. And so I want you to hear that. It's really interesting. I learned a bunch of stuff about My Lai that I did not know. And when you listen to it, you're like, what a clown show, man. What an absolute clown show of an event. So we'll do that tomorrow. And then Tim and Jeff will join me on Thursday. And we'll see if there's anything new to report on the developments out of Afghanistan. Was that anything more than one disgruntled guy? Because as Jeff and I were talking yesterday, normally if this guy is affiliated with the Taliban, they would have pictures, they would have stuff that he had written, and they would put it up pretty quick. You've seen none of that. So what that would lead one to believe is this is somehow or other a personal vendetta, a family vendetta. Yeah. And so anyway, we'll see if there's any new news on that on Thursday, and we'll update the story with Tim Lynch and Jeff Kenny, which they're kind of interesting because Tim did projects in Nangarhar and other provinces in Afghanistan, and then Jeff, the advisor, and now training advisor. So I've been doing that for years. So that going on. I was kind of interested in the nuclear story as it is. And I got to thinking about the United States and nation building and small wars. One of the reasons why, you always hear us talk about phase four and Tommy Franks' lack of a vision of phase four. The problem with not having a vision of what the end state looks like is that these kind of things happen. And I think it's vitally important to American interests that you don't get into a situation where your military is bogged down in a nation for years like we have been, where you're spending, trillions of dollars on a nation that, is not, that you can't save. So pretty important stuff. Yeah, I started talking shit about the Chinese, and oh my God, we got knocked off the air.
I'll tell you, I think there's another one to blame, but this old warhorse laptop. Actually, yesterday, because I usually work at a desktop computer like the old man that I am, so I brought my old laptop with me for this trip. And the CEO of Sandbox, a guy named Sam Meek, he's a former Marine as well. Cool. He came walking out and he looked at my laptop and he was like, "Before you go home, we're buying you a new one." So this will not happen to me again, I hope. As long as they come through and give me a new laptop, we'll be able to send this thing out to pasture.
The computer requirements for Skype on a laptop, audio only, are not substantial.
This computer is honestly pretty decent. I think it's just a little long in the tooth.
I don't. I think it's the Chinese are listening to you, and you were going to shit talk them, and they said, "Yeah, we've had about enough about this." Click.
You know, it's funny that you say that because I wrote an article about how Turkey is utilizing social media to advance a number of propaganda narratives. And I talked a lot about Instagram posts. People don't think of Instagram as a tool of foreign policy, but increasingly in this world, everything that can send a message to someone is a tool of foreign policy. You know, every message has a motive, whether it's a 16-year-old boy talking to a girl he has a crush on, or it's the nation of Turkey trying to manipulate perceptions. You know, every message has a motive behind it. And so after I published this piece about Turkey using particularly Instagram to advance a number of propaganda narratives, my personal Instagram got hacked that same day. 4 hours later, I lost access to my own Instagram account.
I remember that. That's a coincidence, right? That's a coincidence.
A coincidence, right? You know,
ask you this.
After writing a number of articles about how Russia uses social media, there suddenly started being other Alex Hollingses using images of me popping up on Twitter saying things that I would not endorse personally. And Twitter was a big pain in the butt to deal with. I had to send them pictures of my driver's license and stuff to prove that I'm the real Alex Hollings and these other guys are imposters. They were not very conducive.
Just what we want to do, spread our personal detailed information around like that.
Twitter, just let me send you my PII.
Exactly. What? Let me ask you social media, because you're pretty savvy. Iran has shut down Facebook and Twitter, but they allow Instagram. Turkey uses, you know, you just said, much use of Instagram. Why would Iran allow Instagram to continue? Is there any – can you think of any reason they would do that?
I can think of one, but I am shooting from the hip here. So Facebook and Twitter in particular are used for CTAs, for calls to action, right? Instagram is a much more difficult platform to leverage for that. So on Facebook or Twitter, for instance, you could organize a rally. Right. It would be really – it's easy for you to gather a group of like-minded people together on those platforms and disseminate information rapidly, which in a nation like Iran or China, for instance, aren't things that the government want you to be able to do unless they have a finger in it. You know, now Instagram, on the other hand, is more difficult to leverage for oppositional forces, right? But it is very effective for propaganda dissemination. You know, images, if you think back to most people, when you think propaganda, you tend to think World War II era propaganda posters, right? Mm-hmm. Uncle Sam wants you. For the very same reasons that those were effective, Instagram is still a very effective means of narrative management, you know, of getting infographics out there, getting images out there. Iran, as a great example, immediately started publishing on Instagram and on Twitter videos of them launching missiles the same night that they launched the missile strikes against the United States in Iraq. The footage that they used was actually Iraqi missile installations firing on ISIS targets. But that doesn't actually matter. No. What matters is that they got this dramatic and dynamic footage of a missile going airborne, heading straight towards those American infidels. What's important is that people had a visceral reaction to it. Very rarely does your average social media user check beyond the surface of something. That's the reason why social media is such an effective means of narrative management. You don't need to counter other narratives. You just need to give your own narrative enough of a signal boost that it becomes the dominant one, whether or not there's evidence to support it. You know?
What you need to finish your – I just got an email. Mac, will Alex Phoenix – his comment about Chinese censorship relative to movies. So you
– Oh, absolutely. This is a topic that I have a lot of interest in, and I'm disheartened by how few Americans care about it. So I'm excited that somebody is asking for more about it. But effectively, the Chinese government has a team of censors that determine which foreign films can be released in their markets. And they have a cutoff. I think it's something like 100 films from outside of China can be released in China per year. So when you're a large movie studio, that used to not really matter. The Chinese movie market wasn't significant enough for you to tailor your content to them. And then as time went by and the Chinese film-going market grew, as Mac pointed out, a lot of times people would film a different cut-in scenes. You know, the Fast and the Furious has done it in the earlier films where they added prominent Chinese actors and they got more screen time in the Chinese release than they did in the American release. However, the Chinese film market is now such a huge market. We're talking it could mean the difference between $300 million or no dollars at all for some large budget films. It's such a huge market that now these Chinese censors effectively get to dictate the content that goes into these movies. And some great examples I can give you come from the Marvel Universe. And I'm a fan of the Marvel movies.
Oh, let's not go there, okay? We don't want to, like, get your geek on full display right now, okay?
You're right.
But I got kind of a new career and a new lease on life as, like, a legitimate businessman. And do we really want to get the superhero jammies out?
Well, I mean, I'm a nerd. I can't fight who I am, you know? But this has nothing necessarily to do with the heroes. But so Doctor Strange was a very successful movie that got a lot of marketing here in the United States. People may recall that The Ancient One, which was traditionally played by a Tibetan character, was instead played by Tilda Swinton in the Marvel adaptation for the movie. And here in the United States, Marvel was criticized for whitewashing the role. And Marvel just kind of ate that criticism, because the real reason was that the Chinese censors said they would not release the movie in the Chinese markets if it presented a Tibetan character as one of the primary protagonists. For anybody who's not necessarily aware, Tibet, much like Hong Kong, is a satellite nation as far as China is concerned. It belongs to China. But if you were to ask them, if you were to go ask, you know, the Dalai Lama, they would tell you that China's claim over Tibet is an illegal one, right? So China would not allow the movie to be released in Chinese markets, which could have cost $300 to $500 million for the movie's overall gross. So what did the Marvel studios do? They opted to instead cast a white person to play that character just to appease the Chinese government. Sir Ben Kingsley famously played the Mandarin in Iron Man 2 for the same reasons. Marvel was accused of whitewashing the character, but the truth of the matter was is that the Chinese censors would not allow a film where a character who's the primary antagonist, the villain's name, is the Mandarin, right? Smaller changes, like for instance the patches on Maverick's jacket in Top Gun 2, a lot of people have noticed. But there's also things like in the most recent Mission Impossible movie, the Chinese censors made the studio go back and remove clotheslines that you could see in the top of the skyscrapers in Beijing because they were afraid that it would present an image of poverty in Chinese cities. So they actually had to go back and pay a special effects studio to paint out the clotheslines. Otherwise, the Chinese government would not allow the movie to be released in their markets. And we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars here per film. So establishing a good relationship with the Chinese government is in the studio's best interest. And the best thing, the best example I can give you for that are movies like Venom, the Transformers series of movies, as of late, just about anything that Dwayne Johnson's been in. These movies tend not to do all that well domestically. You know, it'll be a $250 million movie, which the general rule of thumb is double that when you talk marketing costs. So to make a penny on Rampage, which was a Dwayne Johnson movie that did very well in China, you have to make $500 million before you can see one penny of profit, right? So these movies do maybe $200 million, $150 million in the United States and do extremely well overseas. Venom is a great example because it really underperformed in the U.S. Here in America, people did not really like Tom Hardy in that character. But overseas, it made $700 million. So now we're going to see another sequel, despite the fact that the movie is made in America, it's full of Americans, and the American public isn't all that interested in it. We're still going to keep seeing new Transformers movies, new Venom movies, for that sole reason that they are incredibly powerful in the Chinese market. What was that movie with Bruce Willis and Joseph Gordon-Levitt? Looper, a few years ago. When that movie was written and greenlit, half the movie was meant to take place in France. But in order to secure Chinese investment to pay for the film and then to have it released in China, they changed the entire story so that half of the story could take place in China instead. So the Chinese government is very, very good at perception management. It's not necessarily overt propaganda like we've been trained to look for. Instead, it's underlying propaganda. It's subversive propaganda in the way that it gives Americans kind of this overall sunny disposition towards the Chinese government, the Chinese people, and the Chinese market. When in reality, as you and I have pointed out, the Chinese government are really kind of the bad guys of the 21st century. We like to worry about Russia, and oftentimes that's because we have historically bad blood with Russia and the former Soviet Union. So they're an easy villain, especially because Vladimir Putin plays the role of a bad guy intentionally.
Yeah, nobody
they invest
plays,
in doomsday weapons.
Nobody plays Dr. Evil like Vladimir Putin. If they could
like
get
Vladimir
him,
Putin.
Yeah, if they could get him in a James Bond movie, that thing would be awesome because he's
Except
the best.
It would have to be a Mission Impossible movie because he's like 5'3", so we need Tom Cruise.
No, we've got we can shoot that. We have angled, man. We have angled.
Exactly.
But I mean, but we, you know, Alex and I have talked about this. You know, Putin is playing charades on an economy the size of Canada's, right? And if you saw last week when the United States, I don't know, it surfaced that we were putting, you know, nuclear warheads on attack submarines, right? And so, which normally we don't do. And then Russia reacted to it. Well, the reason they have to is they can't play in the deep end of the pool, right? They can say we have hypersonic weapons, but we have like 9 of them, okay?
And exactly.
They can't do that. And so where Putin is the true, right, Dr. Evil, right? Xi of China who's been hiding from the coronavirus. Right? Like, where's this dude, right? Candygram, nothing to see here. Keep moving. Like, but where's President Xi? Hey, keep fucking moving, man.
And honestly, even President Xi's disposition in the media, it also plays a role in this overall perception of China as a good guy. China is working diligently to usurp the United States as the diplomatic and economic leader of the world, right? And that's why you do see China get involved in American-North Korean relations. That's why you do see China get involved in anything that involves the Pacific. But when they talk about it publicly, they always paint America as the aggressor for a reason. The same reason why the Trump administration will use keywords and keep repeating them over and over. I say Trump administration because they're the current presidential administration. Every administration does this. You find keywords and then you hammer them home, you know. And the reason you do that is because of source amnesia, which is effectively when you know something but you don't remember where you learned it. Like, I know a giraffe's tongue is black. I don't remember when I learned
it is
a giraffe's tongue is black. It is. Isn't that weird? That's where this narrative management, this perception management comes into play, is that when you see something often enough on social media, even if you consider yourself to be a pretty savvy person, it does start to have an effect. We tend to think that that's an offensive assertion. I am far too smart for propaganda to work on me. But when I tell you advertising works on you, you take that at face value, right? We all know advertising work. Propaganda is just advertising with a government paying for it as opposed to a corporation. It's the same practices. If you open up any Marketing 101 textbook, you can learn a great deal about foreign policy in today's day and age. Like I mentioned with Iran, their combat operations run parallel to their perception operations. Russia is exceedingly good at these gray zone operations, being aggressive in the gray zone that leads up to a catalyst for war. That's why Russia, as we've publicly known but don't talk about, that the Russian government has more than once, the Russian military has more than once hacked into large portions of the American power grid. That's a really scary thing that we tend not to talk about too much, maybe because it's a pretty scary thing. Russia plays the role of the bad guy on purpose. They invented the RS-28 Sarmat, which is their new nuclear ICBM that is literally 100 times more powerful than the Minuteman ICBMs that the United States maintains. Their Status 6 nuclear weapon, it's their Doomsday torpedo. Oh. It's a drone submarine torpedo with 100 megaton nuclear yield weapon, at least according to them. But to Mac's point, the reason why they do these big things is because it's more cost effective for them to draw a great deal of media attention with these large doomsday weapons than it is for them to try to modernize their military overall. Russia's aircraft carrier will probably never sail again because they can't afford to fix it.
The son of a bitch caught on fire about 2 months ago. It was in
caught on fire again about 2 months ago. This thing is it's such a death trap that it sank Russia's only dry dock that could support an aircraft carrier. This is the reason why it'll probably never run again. The Russian government does not have the money to modernize their military the way they like to pretend in the public media sphere. They do that so that, number one, they can retain their role as the big bad boogeyman, which means you've always got to negotiate.
Right.
But they also do it as a part of their marketing enterprise, because foreign weapons sales are some of the only ways that the Russian military can get some of that badly needed money in so that they can start the T-14 Armata, which is Russia's newest battle tank, and the Su-57, which is their new stealth fighter. Neither of them are necessarily as good as advertised, but they are both far better than the primary platforms that the Russian military operates. They just can't afford to build them in large volumes. That's why you get a lot of bluster and doom and gloom from the Russian media. China, on the other hand, has the money. China doesn't need America's money or other nations' money to buy weapons from them for them to modernize their military. They are facing a little bit of economic strain right now when it comes to their carrier programs and stuff. But for the most part, China has been launching dozens of new destroyers, new warships. China's navy is rapidly becoming the largest force in the Pacific. They don't even advertise or put in the media anymore when they launch new vessels because they want it to be difficult to ascertain how many of which types of classes of warships they have. China is playing the role of the good guy publicly and playing the role of the bad guy behind closed doors. And that makes them far more dangerous than a country like Russia that's a known quantity. We know Russia's a bad guy. We know the Suwalki Gap is a place that we are vulnerable to Russian attack. But we also know that Russia could not economically withstand prolonged combat. They could not withstand combat operations with a nation like the United States. It's difficult enough for them to sustain combat operations in Syria in support of Bashar al-Assad. And even in that case, a lot of the news you get out of Syria is basically how ineffective a lot of the Russian platforms are, right, except their World War II era aircraft that they used to drop chemical weapons out of. Those are pretty effective.
Well, yeah, the other interesting stories I think that come out of the region are, you know, that the Russians can fake it, but in terms of sustainability, in terms of projecting logistics and things like that, you read some pretty interesting stuff by people that watch them pretty closely in the region. And, you know, to me, conversely, one of the, you know, if you're interested in power projection, you have to be interested in amphibious operations. And that's what the Chinese are interested in. You see them launching more and more amphibious platforms, being more interested. And there's a few stories. 31st MU operated with the Japanese Maritime Self-Defense Forces. And you had Iron Fist just going on, which is off the coast of California, which is more Japanese Maritime Self-Defense Forces with more Marines here on the west coast of the United States. So those
there's one more aspect of that, too. You also need friendly ports the world over to sustain global operations. People don't realize this about the United States, but that's actually one of our biggest military strengths is our network of friendly ports. Our aircraft carriers are nuclear powered. Our submarines are nuclear powered, but not all of our vessels are. Not everything in a carrier strike group has nuclear power. So they need replenishment at sea. They need replenishment in port fairly often. That's where things like China's Belt and Road Initiative come in, where it's literally military outreach disguised as bags of money. You know, and China has the money to do this, but they don't have it yet. China right now cannot sustain global operations. Ask me again in 20 years, which is incredibly fast. That is the blink of an eye when it comes to these types of strategies. In 20 years, it's entirely feasible to me that China will be able to sustain global naval operations, and that makes them a real threat.
Right, right. Well, to me, it's interesting. One of the things that's interesting is, as you know, as the United States has kind of stood up to China economically and said, yeah, this is going to get a little bit more even. And as our economy has been so strong here the last 24 months, since we kind of locked horns with the Chinese and their economy has struggled, right? I think American leadership, if you will, in the region confronting the Chinese has given Malaysia, Indonesia, Vietnam
for sure.
Right. They're like looking like, well, wait a minute. Is the United States really going to come and stay here and be confrontational economically? Because that's huge to us. Well, then if they're doing it, then maybe we can. And I believe it was Malaysia took China to the UN over the nine dash line. And so you're seeing more of these nations respond a little bit more aggressively than the Philippines did when they won in court and then said, yeah, we're not really interested in enforcing that. And as Alex said, the mineral rights, the petroleum rights, the fishing rights that all go in there, that's huge for those nations. And so that'll be interesting. And so,
I mean, we really do. We have China's aggression to thank for our warming relations with Vietnam. You know, right. James Mattis went to Vietnam not long thereafter, a carrier strike group did, effectively because China forced Vietnamese oil workers off of their platforms. So the Chinese Navy, which is the People's Liberation Army Navy, is substantial. But there's also the Chinese Coast Guard and Chinese Merchant Marines. And if you count all of those vessels together,
right,
you have got a huge amount of force in the Pacific. And what they literally did was they did good old-fashioned siege warfare like medieval times. They parked ships all around these oil rigs so that the oil workers could not receive supplies. And eventually they starved them out. They had to leave the oil rigs. And
these are not Chinese like naval vessels. This is the merchant
fishing
marine.
Boats.
Right.
Yeah.
And they would ram, like if you tried to get in, they would ram your ass, right? So as Alex says, this is like medieval stuff. Does it say something about me as a human being when you say the People's Navy and I think of Dwayne Johnson?
I mean, it just makes you cooler than China, in my opinion, because I like Dwayne Johnson.
I want to ask you, he is cool. The Rock is cool. I want to ask you a current events question. The DOD in their 2021 funding proposal is looking to defund Stars and Stripes.
Absolutely. Or at least significantly cut the funding to Stars and Stripes.
Yeah. I mean, they can't exist without the level of funding that they're talking about taking out.
Agreed.
So is it time? I mean, Stars and Stripes has this great history of, you know, you see guys in World War I and in conflicts all over the world, and World War II sitting on crates of ammunition, reading Stars and Stripes in Korea, Vietnam. But with the advent of the internet, do we need Stars and Stripes anymore? Do they contribute something unique? I didn't see too many paper copies of Stars and Stripes when I was in Iraq or Afghanistan. And I know that I didn't frequent the website when I was looking for news. Has their ship sailed?
Well, this is not a problem that's unique to Stars and Stripes, although I think it was surprising because a lot of us expected as a government entity that you're going to continue to carry on, right? But effectively, this speaks to the overall issue with the media today, which is the media landscape is changing, and often it's changing very quickly. And sometimes those changes aren't necessarily substantiated by economic fact, right? A good example that I can give you is there was a huge influx of video content in the last couple of years. Just about every media website, whether it was news or entertainment, had a strong YouTube and Facebook video presence, right? And for a long time there, Facebook Live was dominating, right? Facebook Live was a place that just about every outlet was trying to get into. But the reason for that was because Facebook and some of these other video hosting platforms were literally lying about the amount of traffic, the amount of views that this content was producing. So the revenue wasn't there. If you were – depending on your revenue model, if it was click-throughs or ad impressions, the revenue was never quite matching the traffic. Facebook ended up paying a great deal of fines, but not nearly as much as they profited for lying about this. But – that is one of a number of rapid changes that have happened in the media atmosphere over the last few years. So first, you'll see a rapid change trying to adapt and adopt new profit models. Then you'll see a rapid change when those profit models don't follow through or don't manifest the way that you expected. Cracked.com was a comedy website that was one of my favorites for years and years. It was born out of the remnants of the old Cracked magazine, like Cracked and Mad magazines. But Cracked grew into its own media entity, right, where it was entertainment and historical news. Not news necessarily, but it was a great place where you could go learn about crazy things that happened in World War II or things like that. And then all of a sudden one day, Cracked fired its entire editorial staff except for two or three people. You know, we've seen it with BuzzFeed. We've seen it with a number of large news and media outlets in the last few years, especially if you follow a lot of journalists on Twitter. You'll see it happen all the time where we'll all retweet the one poor guy who said, my entire team and I got laid off today. If anybody needs a good editor, you know, I'm on the market. The reason for this is because the media game is changing so quickly that it's really difficult for traditional outlets to keep up. And Stars and Stripes is a good example of an outlet that didn't really keep up. Now, my vote would be to bring in some new blood, bring in a growth officer, work on making Stars and Stripes into more of a digital destination, right?
Yeah, but why does the DOD need that when –
I love that question. Okay.
Yeah,
this is why the DOD needs that. And it's something that the DOD is doing very poorly right now.
If it doesn't get involved in the writing, the narrative, and its editorial board is separate, why do I need to pay somebody that I don't control?
Now, there's some truth to that. But this is where outlets like Stars and Stripes can be a huge benefit to the United States. And getting back to that same talk about perception, right? We need good actor narratives in the wild, right? Here in the U.S., and I would argue rightfully so, we see propaganda as a bit of a dirty word. Right. But propaganda is not inherently nefarious, right? Propaganda that's aimed at educating the public or informing the public in a positive way is still technically propaganda if it's paid for by a government. But it's not nefarious. In fact, it benefits us in the long run. So the United States, I've talked about Dr. Ajit Mann at Narrative Strategies spiel before on this show. But effectively, her argument is that the United States bolsters bad actor narratives by waiting for them to manifest and then countering them publicly. Because everybody knows that guy who doesn't believe anything because it came from a government mouthpiece, right? This is where we need effectively government mouthpieces that can play the role in an effective way of informing the public at large. There is no such thing as a local news outlet anymore. Right. If you have a digital presence, you are a global outlet. Your reach may be local, but that's literally just a matter of social media management, right? We need good actor narratives out there, and we need them to be out there first. Instead of waiting for ISIS to say, yeah, we told that guy to shoot those people, when we know that isn't the case, we need to get proactive with our narratives. Mac, you and I talked about, you know, the missile strike on Soleimani. I mispronounced that. In Iraq, you know, the Iranian IRGC Quds Force commander. Right. We talked about how we did a really bad job of making everyone understand why we did it in the first days, weeks, hours after it took place. That's where we're failing. Iran is running parallel information operations to their combat operations. Russia invests more heavily in information operations than they do in modernizing a large portion of their military. China invests billions of dollars each year into perception management in the global marketplace and in the American marketplace. The United States, on the other hand, doesn't really participate in any of that. There was a time when the CIA did it in what you could argue was a nefarious way, where they were literally bringing journalists onto their payroll to advance narratives. And because of that, we're all really hesitant to allow the government to manage any type of narrative. And when we do get, you know, when we have press conferences with the Secretary of Defense, everybody's looking for the gotcha story because we do not assume that we'll get the full truth from this briefing. We need outlets that can give you the full truth in the right way before the bad narratives first reach, or maybe not first reach the digital sphere, but before they get real traction under them.
But Stars and Stripes doesn't do that. I mean, so to me
– But Stars and Stripes is an asset that could do that.
Okay.
So and that's what I mean. What you need to adapt
to
the times.
So the tool – I mean, Voice of America for a long time has played that role to broadcast via, you know, AM radio on these blowtorches around the world so that – you know, the American narrative can be heard by people around the globe.
But what you said right there is the problem in and of itself, is that if you don't adjust for the times, nobody's listening to AM radio.
No. I'm saying, but you
understand. No, but I mean historically. I understand.
Back in the day, that was the way that people – and again,
VOA and Stars and Stripes are not – if you're not affiliated with the military, there's a solid chance you may have never heard of them.
Right.
And that's the problem.
Right.
No, we don't need to be preaching to the choir.
So you would say continue to fund them only if you're going to use them in a certain manner.
I would say you should continue to fund them because they do because what they do for society is good. And if we can afford to fund a lot of programs that are absolutely frivolous, we can afford to fund journalism. However, I would say that although if I were the Secretary of Defense, I certainly wouldn't advertise that this is my position, but I would say that we need outlets that understand and propagate the American narrative when it comes to conflict the world over. People overwhelmingly have a positive idea of what China is because China is interested in making us feel that way about China. The United States doesn't do any of that. And that's the reason why – not the only, but that is one of the reasons why we've had a lot of difficulty in maintaining a positive image internally and externally with the public at large, right? The United States and a lot of other countries tends to be a bit of a punching bag internally. You know, when you watch the Democratic National Conventions, without politicizing this at all, Donald Trump campaigned on the idea that America isn't great anymore. You know, the Democrats are now campaigning on the idea that we need to fix America again. This idea that America is inherently flawed sells well. We never talk about what America is doing well. We only talk about what America is doing poorly in the media sphere and politically. And that has far-reaching implications. You know, Iran gets the same CNN that we get. And that's the reason why Iran is so worried about the American perceptions of combat operations. Because Iran knows that America does not want to get embroiled in another long war in the Middle East. Iran knows that America is tired of being in the two long wars in the Middle East that it has been in. If you can make this seem like it will be a prolonged engagement, it'll be economically taxing, it'll cost American lives, public support for it will diminish rapidly. And without public support, it's really difficult to maintain a long-term war. You know, we saw it in Vietnam. We're seeing it now in Afghanistan. It takes a while for the voter to get a say, but the voter absolutely does get a say.
Interesting. What's the next big story you guys are going to
– I got to tell you, man. I wish I could tell you. I've been in meetings for the last 2 days, which are really, really exciting, but it's unplugged me from the world. So this afternoon, I'm going to keep my headphones on and really drill down and look through some more things. But there will definitely be some new primers coming out very soon. And when I say primers, I mean issues like the Suwalki Gap is one primer I've been working on for a week or so now, where I want people to understand what this is. The idea is to have a good understanding when you see a headline. A lot of Americans get their news via headlines and feature photos, for better or worse, right? I would really like it to – I'd like to be in a position where you can read this primer on the South China Sea and you're equipped to glean more effectively from your brief perusal of the news, right? If you know basically why there's conflict in the South China Sea, you'll understand that headline that says near collision between a Chinese and an American destroyer could have been a really big deal that happened in 2018. If you just read the headline without background knowledge, you might think that America was the aggressor in those circumstances.
You might think that was an accident.
Exactly. Likewise, in the Baltics, you know, when you see a headline where you're, you know, Latvia is complaining about Russian digital antenna jamming, and you go, yeah, what do I care about Lithuania? The reason why you care about Lithuania and Estonia and the Suwalki Gap is because it's literally a 48-mile stretch of land between Kaliningrad, which is a Russian satellite, and Belarus, which is a Russian ally. And they hold Zapad drills every 4 years in Belarus that are massive military undertakings. And they leave heavy equipment there every time they do it. Just in the off chance that they ever do want to capture that gap and separate the Baltics from NATO, they could literally separate three of the NATO nations from the rest of NATO, which would make it very difficult to get supplies there. These are the types of things that I want to be very clear are not going to lead to war this year. There will not be World War III that breaks out in October of this year or even in 5 years unless something really dramatic happens. But this is us setting the table for the next great global conflict. Russia and China are getting friendlier and friendlier. Iran is getting friendlier with China as they've already been fairly friendly. North Korea is getting friendlier and friendlier economically with Russia because it benefits from not giving China as much leverage as they've got. These nations right now are kind of loosely affiliated, but as time goes on and the United States uses economic sanctions to kind of back these people into a corner, they're all going to end up in the same corner. And we're setting the table for what could be the new axis of evil, you know, to steal a World War II and then a George W. Bush term. We're setting the table to establish a new axis of evil, a new axis powers that very likely could be where the next global conflict arises from. It doesn't mean it's a sure thing. What it really means is that we need to engage with it now. We need to work on these narratives now. We need to, you know, someone on LinkedIn recently commented on one of my articles saying that there's no ROI on defense spending. That is just not the case. The return on investment of deterrence is continued survival. It's difficult to measure that ROI.
It's not dollars coming back. Somebody who would say that doesn't understand, you know, that the economy, the world economy, the rules-based order that we have in the that was keeled by, you know, the post-World War II world, which is all that we all share in, right? That is guaranteed by, right, our defense in our investment in defense. And
very literally.
Yeah.
Very literally.
And so to me, I think what's really interesting is Angela Merkel's chosen successor, right, announced that she was not going to run further. She was not going to in Germany. So to me, if Germany would step up, if the largest economy in Europe would step up and just do the minimum, just have a standing army, right, just do the minimum it's obliged to do in NATO, that tips the balance of power in Europe, and Russia is no longer even anything to worry about, right? NATO, I mean, Germany enables Russia. And so to me, there's some interesting things, but in a rules-based order that we have had, the rules are important, and that's why I think greater concert among free allies is important, because if you were paying attention to the economic confrontation between China and the United States, you know, imagine if South Korea, Japan, Australia, the United States, the UK, France, and Germany all said to the Chinese the same thing. When you fuck with one of us, you're going to fuck with all of us. So we would like you to go ahead and treat us equally. And for everybody who's watched this American Watusi with the Chinese, you know, whether it be the UK, France, Germany, we want the same deal that the Americans got. And we're willing to stand together. And you've got to come to the table as a partner and not this demonic, gangster-like extortionist, right, that has been your act. And if we all hang together, none of us will hang separately.
And the only way that we can really do that is if we all get on the same page narrative-wise.
Right.
As long as – if the vast majority of Americans only get their perception of China from Hollywood and from the headlines, it'll be more difficult to get their support in these types of endeavors, right? A lot of people – I do need to wrap up because I'm already late for a meeting. But a lot of people tend to blame Donald Trump for everything, whether it's his fault or not. So even if he does something right, like argues that China has been taking advantage of the United States economically, people tend to withhold their support because it's not being sold to them in an effective manner.
Well, then
we need to sell these initiatives better.
And they hate his guts. One more email. Is it primer or primer?
I always say primer, but it's kind of like that en route or en route or, you know, I always say I'm en route, but some people say en route. I spend most of my life writing and not talking. So however you'd prefer it to be pronounced, that's how I'm pronouncing it when you read it.
Got it. All right. Tell everybody where they find your work these days.
You can definitely find my work on Sandbox. It's sandbox.us, Sandbox with two X's. You can also find my work on social media, facebook.com/AlexHollingsWriter. On Twitter, I'm at AlexHollings52. You can check out AlexHollings.com. And please swing by Facebook and look up Sandbox News. Give us a like. We have a brand new page, so there's only 400 or 500 people following us right now. But we're growing quick. Give us a little bit of support on Facebook. I'd really appreciate it.
There you have it. Alex Hollings. Hey, thanks for the visit. I'll talk to you.
Hey, thanks, Mac. Talk to you soon.
There you have it. Alex Hollings with his new gig, traveling around the world, being important. So congratulations to him. Congratulations to him. The Chinese. They are the new evil empire, right? Communism is right, and everyone else is wrong. And capitalists, in their zeal to make more money, tripping over themselves, right? And the NBA is a great example, right? Doesn't matter what you do to your people, we're making a ton of money. And I mean the hilarious nature of all of that, right? Nike manufacturing its shoes there. And all of that. And their social media champion, Colin Kaepernick. Right. Stand for something. Right. Stand for something, even if it costs you everything. What about what's going on in Hong Kong? Cricket. 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 Right. It is just the grossest shit. You know, it is just the grossest shit going on the planet. and honestly, amazing to watch. And what they did was just don't comment on it, and maybe it will just all go away. All right. If you're just tuning in, first of all, thanks for listening today. Second of all, right, don't be afraid to go out and change somebody's life. And all you got to do is listen. And when you hear them struggling, you know what to say. Hey, man, can I talk to you? And that should begin a conversation that will change their life. And as I said, it happens to me all the time. Happened to me again yesterday. And all you got to do is pay attention. You don't even have to go looking for it. I promise you. I talked about going to lunch yesterday with some of my battle buddies, which is always an awesome time. And it was. You'll hear Lindsey Graham in the first hour. I think the Democratic thing kind of interesting to watch. And if you understand the nation, that the nation is not going to elect Bernie Sanders president. And, you know, and will the Democratic Party somehow or other have to embrace a socialist? So supposedly Senator Sanders is going to win in New Hampshire, as he did against Hillary Clinton. And then supposedly Joe Biden's going to win in South Carolina. Now, here's the deal. You're going to hear Lindsey Graham come on and talk about that, what he believes. And then enter Mike Bloomberg on Super Tuesday. And then Bloomberg, you know, much more of a centrist, you know, former mayor of New York City, billionaire, blah, 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 blah. So we're going to have the battle of the billionaires, you know, possibly, in a run for the presidency. So it's kind of interesting to watch, you know, the fight over the soul of the Democratic Party, in that the media, you know, is so enamored with the socialist agenda, right? Their darling, AOC, who's kept a very low profile, by the way. It's kind of interesting that she hasn't been heard of very much anymore. So, anyhow, we talk about that a little bit. And then a whole bunch of DOD news. The DOD budget out talked about less funding for the war in Iraq and the war in Afghanistan. Talk about defunding Stars and Stripes. You just heard Alex talk about that. And then a whole series of other stories. To include interesting stuff. Initial reaction from members of Congress to the Navy requesting fewer ships. Congress's response, yeah, that ain't happening. So anyway, so we'll see how that bodes relative to the Marine Corps, who's asking for 2,000 fewer Marines in fiscal year 2020 and fiscal year 2021. And the Navy asking for, I want to say, 4,000, 5,000 more. So, yep. On a Tuesday, that'll do it. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. All Marine Radio, over and out.